Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode of The In-Between is intended for mature audiences and includes topics such as emotional, sexual, and physical violence. Testimony shared by guests of the show is their own and does not reflect the views of Mel Barrett or Ruby Grace Productions. Listener discretion is advised.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, this is... We called a little bit ago about a missing person, well, two missing persons, and we mistakenly gave them the wrong address. So we talked about the place in West Virginia, so we were dealing with West Virginia dispatch. So if it would be possible to give you guys the information, and yeah, we'll need to cancel the other one, but the other search that's already going on.
Okay. A missing person, you say? Where is this at?
There are two missing persons, and this is going to be kind of around the Savage River Reservoir in Garrett County. There's a path that leads up on a mountain where there's an old fire tower.
Yeah.
And that's where I just went there looking for them, and I found evidence that they were there, but I couldn't find them at all.
I want to tell you why I'm bringing you this case in particular. On the surface, it looks like just another tragic crime story. Two young people go into the woods and only one comes out. The other is found dead in a way that feels almost impossible to explain. And the courts have given us a version of the truth, but when I dig into the case, something doesn't sit right with me. It's not just the ritual, the candles, or even the cat. It's the contradictions, the way our lead character's story changes, the way the forensic evidence doesn't quite line up, the way both sides of this case feel like they're holding back something essential. The story, it's not neat. It doesn't tie up with a bow, and maybe that's why I can't let it go. That's why we're going to walk into the woods together, into the middle of this strange, brutal night on Savage Mountain, and see what we find. I'm Mel Barrett. Welcome to The In-Between. The woods of Savage River State Forest are vast, remote, and indifferent. By night, Savage Mountain is cloaked in darkness and silence, a sprawling 55,000-acre wilderness in western Maryland where stars vanish behind twisting pines and the nearest town feels worlds away. On January 3, 2017, this isolated expanse became the stage for a tragic mystery. Two friends, 24-year-old Alexander Stevens and 21-year-old Megan Schaefer, ventured into the forest under the cover of winter night. They came for what Megan would later call a cleansing ritual, intending to burn personal items and perhaps shed old burdens. The ground was hard with frost. Their only light came from the moon and the flicker of candles they brought along. In the stillness, a cage sat nearby. Inside, Alex's beloved cat waited, as if a part of the strange ceremony. No one knew that by dawn, one of them would be fighting for her life and the other would be dead. No one witnessed exactly what happened, but sometime that night, Alex and Megan fell from a sheer 33-foot overlook into the abyss. The drop was brutal. They crashed onto the unforgiving slope below, amid rocky outcrops and tangles of laurel. In the blackness, their ritual turned into a nightmare. Megan was badly hurt, later diagnosed with a broken shoulder and fractured back. Alex was grievously injured too, sustaining broken ribs and a punctured lung in the fall. Both of them somehow survived the initial impact. I can only imagine their agony. The wind knocked out of them, bones shattered, the January cold quickly seeping into their exposed skin. Yes, exposed, because at some point during their ritual, both had removed their clothes as part of this cleansing rite. When they fell, they were naked and vulnerable in the winter night. Megan and Alex were trapped in that wilderness for hours. Unable to climb back up the steep rock face, they began to move, or perhaps crawl, deeper into the forest, walking down the mountain, as Megan described it later. It's unclear how far Alex managed to walk or if Megan helped him. What we do know is that by the end of this ordeal, Alex was about a mile and a half from the cliff, in a low-lying drainage area, and Megan was nowhere near him. At some point in the pre-dawn hours, the two became separated. Perhaps Alex, seriously wounded, couldn't continue and told Megan to go on without him. Or maybe Megan, disoriented and hypothermic, lost track of Alex in the dark. According to what Megan would later tell authorities, she believed Alex was dead after the fall, that he succumbed to his injuries there on the mountainside. And so injured and alone, Megan pressed on through the night. Freezing air gnawed at her bare skin. Every step must have been torture with a broken back, yet she kept going. She had to find help or risk dying out there herself. Sometime after daybreak on January 4th, 2017, Megan emerged from the wild. In the pale morning light, she found herself near a rural home on Pine Swamp Road, a house that by chance or fate was unoccupied at the time. Desperate, Megan forced her way inside where, incredibly, she found a working cell phone and dialed 911. It was around 7:30 a.m. when that call for help finally went out.
911, what's the address of your emergency? You don't know where you are.
Nice.
What's your name?
Megan Schaefer.
Megan, okay. How old are you, Megan?
I'm okay.
You're what?
I'm fine.
You're five?
Well, how old am I? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
I'm 20.
Okay. What's wrong? What's going on, Megan?
I'm in the woods.
You're in the woods? Are you the one that was lost?
I don't know. I was in the woods and found this house.
You found a house?
And now I'm in a home.
Okay.
I think I found some mail.
Okay. Where were you at? Where did you get lost at?
I'm in Garrett County.
Okay. Were you lost all night?
Yeah.
Were you down in the state park?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. We're going to get some people out there to you, okay?
Hold on, there's a house.
Yeah, okay, we're going to get some people there to you, okay?
Can I read you
the number?
Address?
Yeah, read me the address.
I believe it's 2316.
2316 Pine Swamp Road. Okay. I'm going to stay on the phone with you until we get somebody there with you, okay? Is there anybody there at the house?
No, there's no one here.
Okay. So was there anybody else with you that was lost?
Yeah, there's one other male.
There's nobody there?
There was one other male.
Okay. Are you hurt or injured? Do you need an ambulance?
I need an ambulance.
Okay. Where's the other person that was with you?
They're still in the woods.
Oh, we're out in the woods. Do you know?
I don't believe you.
Okay. Just stay on the phone with me. I'm going to get some information, okay?
Can I sit down?
Yeah, sit down on the front porch or sit down somewhere there and wait for it. We're going to wait until you
get... I'm in the couch.
Are you inside the house now?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you sure there's no one there?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know whose home that is?
No.
Okay.
I just found it and needed to call someone.
Okay. And you went in and got the phone?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what that... Okay. Just stay on the phone. I'm not going to hang up with you until we get some officers out there with you, okay?
I need How you to... long?
They're going to be there shortly. They're looking for you. They've been looking for you all night. Okay? I need you to do one thing. I need you to make sure there's no one in the house that may hurt you if you wake... If they come out and find you. I need you to holler or make sure there's no one there. Because I don't want... Just...
Hello,
okay, is there anyone answering you?
No.
Just tell them you need help.
I need help.
Okay.
The missing people that you have down in the Savage River.
Okay. So, what are you injured, or are you just need an ambulance because of your, are you cold?
Both.
You're cold?
Both.
Both. How are you injured?
I think I have some broken bones.
Okay, what happened?
I fell off a cliff.
Okay, you fell off a cliff?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your name?
Megan.
Megan? What's your last name, Megan?
Schaefer.
Megan Schaefer, okay.
Megan Schaefer.
Okay, Megan, just stay on the phone. Where's the other person that you were with? What's his name?
Alex.
Alex what?
Stevens.
Alex Stevens? And where is Alex?
He's still in the woods.
Okay, was he okay?
No.
Is he hurt, or is he...
I believe he's dead.
You think he's dead?
Yes.
Well, did you both fall off the cliff?
Yes.
Okay, just stay on the phone with me.
Megan's voice on the line was frantic and confused, her thoughts no doubt as broken as her bones. In a recording of the 911 call later released, Megan's responses are vague and chilling, and the first ranger to speak with her said he thought she was a little girl because of how high-pitched and slurred her speech was. She also struggled to describe where she was, not surprising given the vastness of the forest. The dispatcher, sensing more to the story, asked if anyone was with her. There was a long pause. You could almost hear Megan's teeth chattering. Then she says it. He's dead. The words land heavy and cold. More on this after a quick break.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
A search and rescue was immediately organized. Garrett County Emergency Services dispatched personnel into the woods, and a Maryland State Police helicopter took to the air. Meanwhile, Megan was taken by ambulance to the Western Maryland Regional Medical Center in nearby Cumberland. Her body, severely hypothermic, covered in cuts and bruises from the night's ordeal. Despite everything, she was alive. Paramedics noted her incoherence and shock. One medic later recalled an eerie detail. As Megan was being cared for, she blurted out that her handprints would be found on the knife. It was a strange and specific thing to say in that moment, a sign that more had happened on the mountain than initially met the eye. That same morning, the helicopter searchers spotted something near a logging road about a mile and a half downslope from High Rock. There, in a shallow, icy stream, lay the body of Alexander Stevens. He was face down in frigid water, completely naked, his pale form brutalized by the elements. It was roughly 9:30 a.m. on January 4th when they found him. Ground teams converged on the site. What they discovered sent a ripple of shock through the first responders. Alex's throat had been slashed open. In fact, it had been cut deeply and more than once. Above Alex on the ridge, investigators found a makeshift campsite. They noted the burnt-out stubs of candles stuck in the ground, their wax cooled and hardened, and perhaps strangest of all, Alex's pet cat was there, alive, still confined in its little carrier next to the candles. The scene was beyond surreal. It looked like some macabre ritual had played out in these woods. The presence of the candles and the cat hinted that whatever cleansing ceremony Alex and Megan intended had continued or taken a darker turn after the fall. Rescuers are trained to expect the unexpected, but I'm sure none of them anticipated finding what they did that morning. A naked young man, dead from a vicious neck wound, an empty campsite save for several candles melted down as if in vigil, and a shivering cat in a cage bearing witness to whatever happened on Savage Mountain. One responder carefully retrieved the cat, which was cold and hungry but mercifully unharmed. Detectives began photographing and sketching the area, treating it as a potential crime scene. The kitchen knife, Megan had cryptically mentioned, was indeed there, lying beside Alex's body in the icy mud. It was smeared with blood. Right away, the questions multiplied. Did Alex somehow cut his own throat? Did Megan do it? Or was there a third person involved out here in the silent woods? By the time Megan awoke in her hospital bed, words of Alex's fate had reached law enforcement. Investigators from Maryland State Police were dispatched to interview her as soon as her condition allowed. Megan was in pain, hooked to IVs, her body stabilized in a cervical collar and blankets from hypothermia. She was notified of her rights, and despite her injuries, she agreed to talk, without a lawyer present. What followed were a series of three police interviews over 3 days in which Megan tried to explain what happened on Savage Mountain and gave starkly conflicting versions of the story each time. In her first statement on January 4th, just hours after being pulled from the woods, Megan was surprisingly lucid. A trooper later remarked that she provided clear, concise answers despite her trauma. During his initial 30-minute interview, Megan painted a bizarre tableau of the previous night. She said that she and Alex had indeed gone up the mountain for a cleansing of some type, a spiritual hike of sorts. They had stripped off their clothes as part of the ritual, an act symbolizing purity or rebirth, perhaps, and walked together to the cliff's edge under the night sky. Then tragedy struck. According to Megan, they both slipped and fell from the overlook, tumbling 20 to 30 feet down. She described lying injured next to Alex in the darkness, both of them hurt and in pain. They eventually managed to get up and make their way down the mountain as best they could. Up to this point, Megan's account was harrowing, but not unbelievable, a tale of an accident in the wild. But then came the twist. Megan claimed that once they had struggled into the valley below, Alex then slit his throat with the knife. She insisted she never touched the blade, never meant to harm him. In this version, Alex's death was effectively a suicide, an act of despair from a man who'd decided he couldn't go on. Megan said Alex was tired of suffering from his injuries, so he took the knife they carried, perhaps for the ritual or camping, and cut his own throat while she was only a few feet away. Shocked and horrified, Megan supposedly left Alex where he fell and wandered until she found the house to call 911. It's a chilling story, and it's one Megan herself would later admit was a lie. More on this after a quick break.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Could Alex really have killed himself in such a gruesome fashion? He had been through a lot in recent years, expulsion from the U.S. Coast Guard Academy after claims of sexual assault. His father, Jay Stevens, would later acknowledge Alex had been devastated by that event and had grown his hair long, delved into books on religion, searching for meaning. But Jay was adamant that his son was not suicidal, pointing to Alex's future plans and even the toys he'd recently bought for the cat as signs of someone who intended to live. Nonetheless, early on January 4th, Megan Schaefer's initial account to police placed the blame entirely on Alex's own shoulders. A tragic accident followed by an impulsive suicide. Investigators, however, were not completely convinced. They gently pressed her for details, and soon Megan's story started to shift. When police returned the next day, January 5th, for a second interview, Megan had had more time to process, and perhaps more time to realize the holes in her story. Lying in a hospital bed in and out of pain medication, but described as normal, attentive, and fine to talk, that day she largely repeated her original account. She stuck to the core claim. They fell by accident, and Alex, gravely injured, took his own life by slashing his throat. She emphasized that she was 3 to 4 feet away when Alex cut his throat, as if to make it clear she didn't wrestle with him or physically assist. If her tone in the first interview had been factual, in the second, it was defensive. She denied over and over that she had intended any harm. And at this stage, Megan continued to insist she never hurt Alex, nor herself, dispelling any notion of a mutual suicide attempt. Detectives noted the consistency between the first two statements and the consistency of their doubts as well. There were problems that simply wouldn't go away. For one, if both had fallen that far, how had Megan found the strength to leave Alex and trek out alone? And if Alex was strong enough to walk a mile with a punctured lung, why would he suddenly choose to end it all instead of seeking help? The investigators were polite, even empathetic with Megan. They let her talk and waited to see if she would elaborate or slip up, and eventually she did. On January 6, police interviewed Megan a third and final time. Perhaps sensing that her original story wasn't fully believed, Megan changed her version of events dramatically in this interview. This time, she claimed that when they were at the cliff's edge, Alex hadn't slipped by accident. He pulled her over the cliff intentionally, almost as if initiating a murder-suicide plunge. In this telling, Alex became the aggressor. He grabbed Megan and yanked her with him off high rock, causing them both to go down. The implication was startling. Was Megan suggesting Alex tried to kill them both? If so, that was a very different narrative than an innocent hike gone wrong. But Megan didn't stop there. She now introduced the knife into the story in a new way. She said that after they fell and while they were together at the bottom, Alex forced her to hold the knife against him. At first, she said he forced her to hold the knife while he fell on it, essentially impaling himself by using her hands. But later in the same interview, she altered it slightly. Alex, gripping Megan's hand that held the blade, dragged the knife across his own throat multiple times, slicing himself open. In this version, Megan was not just a passive bystander. She was literally hand in hand with Alex during the fatal act. But, as she would have it, still not a willing participant in his death. She was merely the unwilling instrument, with Alex controlling her emotions to carry out his supposed wish to die. By the end of that third interview, Megan conceded something telling. She admitted it was possible Alex intended to kill himself by jumping off the cliff in the first place. It's as if her story evolved to encompass every scenario: first accident, then suicide, then murder-suicide, and assisted suicide all in one. It seemed like Megan was throwing explanations at the wall to see what might stick. Three interviews, three conflicting stories, investigators now had a 360-degree panorama of possibilities from Megan Schaefer, or perhaps a tangle of contradictions. A slip-and-fall accident, a self-inflicted death, an attempted mutual suicide, and almost homicide by Alex. Megan's accounts were mutually exclusive in parts and collectively bewildering. Crucially, in all of her tales, Megan denied actively killing Alex. Not once did she say, "I harmed him." It was always Alex who either harmed himself or tried to harm her. But investigators had to set aside Megan's words for a moment and look at the physical evidence. Alex's body, the knife, the blood, the surroundings, what story did they tell? To find out, Alex's body was transported to the state medical examiner's office for a full autopsy, and what came back from the medical examiner would change everything. More on this after a quick break.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the autopsy, Dr. Carol Allen made a chilling determination. Alexander Stevens' cause of death was sharp force injuries to the neck, and the manner of death was ruled homicide. The injuries on Alex's throat were not consistent with a single desperate slash by a man in agony. They were something else entirely. Dr. Allen found at least seven distinct cut wounds in Alex's neck. Seven sawing motions, she described. Each deep and forceful, these cuts weren't tentative. They had severed Alex's carotid artery and jugular vein, vital vessels, and one cut even nicked the bone of his spinal column. It was a brutal, frenzied injury, the kind of wound that is almost impossible to self-inflict, especially if one is weak and severely hurt from a fall. Dr. Allen would later testify that by the time these gashes were made, Alex was already so debilitated by the fall with multiple broken bones and internal injuries that he could not possibly have had the strength to cut his own throat in this manner. In her expert opinion, these were not suicidally inflicted wounds. They indicated an attacker, or at least a second person's hand on that blade. The autopsy also confirmed the injuries that Alex had sustained from the fall, broken ribs and a punctured lung, which aligned with a significant fall trauma. But those injuries hadn't killed Alex. The cutting of his throat had. When confronted with the autopsy findings, Megan's elaborate stories began to crumble. None of her versions fully squared with the science. If Alex had cut his own throat, how had he managed 7 deep slices? If he fell on the knife or dragged it across with her hand, why were the wounds so extensive, and why did he have the knife at his throat and not hers? Investigators now face the very real likelihood that Megan Schaefer was not the victim of some tragic pact or accident, but an active participant, maybe even the perpetrator in Alexander Stevens' violent death. 8 months later, in September 2017, Megan Schaefer was arrested and charged with second-degree murder, manslaughter, and assisting suicide in Alex's death. The story had made headlines in Western Maryland and beyond. Girlfriend charged in death of man found naked in the forest, the news read. People were horrified yet morbidly fascinated by the case's bizarre details. The nakedness, the candles, the cat, the talk of rituals. For the community, this was more than a crime. It was a local legend in the making. Everyone had a theory. Was Megan a cold-blooded murderer who staged an accident? Was she covering for a suicide pact gone awry? Was there something more occult at play on Savage Mountain that night? The gossip mill churned, even as Alex's family simply grieved, remembering a young man who loved music, served in the Coast Guard Academy Glee Club, and had his whole life ahead of him. In the end, it would be up to a jury to sift fact from fiction, but that drama was still to come. Episode 1 of our story ends with Megan Schaefer in handcuffs, charged with murdering the very person she claimed to have watched die by his own hand. It ends with the autopsy report in the spotlight, contradicting Megan's claims and casting a dark shadow of suspicion on her. And we're left with haunting questions. What really happened on Savage Mountain? Did Megan love Alex or fear him? Did Alex want to die or was he killed? And how do we reconcile the Megan who sobbed through a 911 call with the Megan now accused of a savage crime? I want to leave you with this. I've spoken with both Megan Schaefer and with her father. I've heard their words, their pain, their attempts to make sense of something that may never fully be understood. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know where the truth lies. Megan insists she didn't kill Alex. Her father believes his daughter is not a murderer. But then there's the evidence, the autopsy, the contradictions that don't add up. Something about this case has always felt off to me. Maybe it's the way grief bends memory. Maybe it's the way trauma scrambles our narrative. Or maybe it's something darker, something we'll never be able to see clearly. All I know is that 2 people went into the woods that night and only 1 came back. And the story of what happened between them remains caught in the in-between. Next time on The In-Between, we delve into the trial of Megan Schaefer. We'll uncover what evidence the prosecution and defense brought forth in court, hear the dueling expert testimonies, and follow the twisting strategies that each side employed. We'll explore the psychological and symbolic threads running through this case, rituals and candles, allegations of a suicide pact, even whispers of abuse. And we'll confront the uncomfortable truth that even a courtroom verdict can't dispel all doubt. The story isn't over, and neither is the search for truth in the Savage Mountain mystery.
The In-Between podcast is written, edited, and hosted by me, Mel Barrett, and is a production of Ruby Grace Productions. If you want ad-free exclusive content, bonuses, and lives, head on over to the In-Between podcast Patreon and sign up. The researcher level starts at $6, and there's already 20-plus ad-free episodes for you to binge right now. Special thanks to Amber Hunt for editorial guidance, as well as the rest of the team at Grab Bag Collab, Amanda Rossman, and Daisy Egan, for their support and guidance. Another special thanks to Rebecca Lavoie for her friendship and mentorship. You can catch me and Rebecca recapping the Karen Reed trial on the Crime Writers On, The Readathon. Follow the In-Between podcast on Blue Sky, Facebook, and YouTube at In-Between Pod, and on Instagram at The In-Between Pod Official. On TikTok, you can follow me at Jack of All Trades DC. Thanks for listening.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.